What does it take to grow a new industry? Canopy Rivers doesn't just invest in revolutionary cannabis companies. They strengthen them by connecting those businesses to each other. By unifying people, capital, and ideas, Canopy Rivers is raising the potential for all. Visit bepartoftherise.com to find out how Canopy Rivers is building the cannabis industry of tomorrow, today. This is not an offer to sell or a recommendation to trade in any securities. Investors should review Canopy Rivers' continuous disclosure and risk factors therein, available on SEDAR.com.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.
You've heard Phil Gersky on this program many times. He's worked in past in partnership with the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, you know, CSIS, as a senior strategic analyst, now the president and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting. Phil, thanks for joining us back on the show. Welcome back.
Hey, it's always a great pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me back.
You know, I was just checking out your website, BorealisThreatAndRisk.com. You guys put so much work into your content. I love it. And it's heavy subject matter, I'll note. But you do these Today in Terrorism posts. And every day, you've got a note. You look back on a story. Today, you talk about the bombings in Saudi Arabia. People can read for themselves. I was especially fascinated your post on Guy Fawkes and the gunpowder plot back on November 5th. For a lot of people on social media that changed their profile photos to what some may have perceived to be an endorsement of Anonymous, that iconic mask, that image goes way back, doesn't it?
And just for the record, Brian, I didn't work that case at CSIS. I wasn't around in 1605 to worry about that figure terrorist plot. But no, thanks for the feedback. I've had a guy revamp my website recently, and I'm just trying to get a perspective out there on what's happening, not just here in Canada, but around the world. Because as you know, what happens in Somalia can affect what happens in this country as well. So just trying to get a bit of information out there as to ways to think about this stuff, but it's nice to see that it's gaining some attention anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. And one of the things it reiterates, I suppose, Phil, tragically, is that you've got plenty of subject matter. You've got plenty of material to work with every day on the calendar, which reiterates, of course, the reality that so-called terrorism, we may not have used that word until just a couple of hundred years ago, but terrorism in its many ways, shapes, and forms has been around forever and has been fueled by many different things.
You're absolutely right. In fact, I've got to make a judgment call every single day on what attack to feature and try not to be repetitive, but I've got a surplus of information that I can use, and which is tragic in itself, and then I make an editorial choice on which ones to feature, which ones are not. But no, I'm not looking for information. Trust me, the information is there. And it underscores your point is that, yeah, this has happened for a very long time, and I hate to say this, hate to be the pessimist on a Friday afternoon, but it's not going away anytime soon.
Phil, what you and I have talked about religious extremism in past in the context of, you know, I mean, the lead up to or the ideology driving terror attacks. Your book that's coming out at the end of this month, When Religion Kills, what sort of gave you the idea that this was something you wanted to take a longer form approach to? What prompted you to go ahead and write this book?
That was a really great question. And basically if I break it down as simply as I can, I looked at jihadis and Islamist extremists for 15 years at CSIS. I worked on hundreds and hundreds of investigations, and my first four books were all about Islamist extremism, Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, et cetera, et cetera. And so I just asked myself a very simple question. Are these the only guys doing this in the name of God? And the more I looked at it, the more I found the answer is no. And the thing that really struck me when I was gathering the data to put together towards the book, I was dealing with Buddhist terrorists. Now, that should be an oxymoron. I mean, I'm not a Buddhist, but the two words I'm less likely to put together are Buddhism and terrorism. And I found out that in at least three countries, you've got some very senior Buddhist religious figures calling for their followers to kill people. And that really, really worried me. So hence the book came out of that simple idea. Is it more widespread than just talking about a couple of people in the Middle East or whatever who happen to be Muslim?
And so what is it about? I mean, is this a common thread that, I mean, I obviously people are going to push back when they hear their religion mentioned here, but is this, when we really take an objective and open-minded look at all religious dogma, is there a common thread that almost leads its way to extremism if people perceive it that way or interpret it that way?
you're absolutely right. I'm going to get a lot of feedback on this, not all positive. And I've been dealing with negative feedback since I joined CSIS, trying to talk about, you know, a small group of Muslims who purport to be proponents of the faith are using religious texts to justify why they should kill people. Is there a common thread? I think insofar as extremist groups have always been with us, some of them use ideologies that are purely political in nature. Some use ideologies that are religious in nature. I just happen to focus on those that happen to be very, very devout people as far as they saw themselves, and they had no compunction in seeing other faith groups. This is a lot of the book looks at how one religious group targets another. They had no problem saying, my God and the faith that I believe in doesn't like your God or the faith that you believe in, and therefore I'm at complete liberty to take you out unless you kowtow to my demands. So if there's a common thread, Ryan, I think that's it, that unfortunately faith is being used to justify some heinous acts of violence all around the world.
So, Phil, can you take us into the process of writing this book? Who did you interview? Who did you talk to? And where did you glean maybe some of the most significant or even surprising insight?
Well, one thing I did as an intelligence analyst when I worked at CSIS and before that at CSE is I'm an information hog. I just read all the time. And because of the area of the world I looked at when I was at CSC in the 1980s, I had to be up on what was happening in the Middle East, what was happening in South Asia, et cetera, et cetera. And that habit has still stuck with me. I've been retired for 4.5 years now from CSIS, and I still read 3 to 4 hours a day. And so I was aware of what the sources were in terms of the information, and being able to, as a former analyst, being able to distinguish what's relevant from what's not relevant. I basically gathered data for a year from sources all around the world. Normally in English, and there are some shortcomings of that, which I completely acknowledge, but, you know, there's so much information available nowadays that points to these acts of violence carried out by these actors, but I had a wealth of data, and the book kind of wrote itself, because the book is not an academic tone. It's a former practitioner, a former spy, a former intelligence analyst saying, here's some data, here's what I think it means. And so the collection of the data took a long time, but once I had it there, it's like the story was kind of unfolding naturally.
So what did you learn? We're talking to Phil Gursky, if you're just tuning in, his book, When Religion Kills, How Extremists Justify Violence Through Faith. What did you learn about how, and I keep using the word extremist because I think it fits, Phil, but if you prefer a different word, let me know. How do these individuals manipulate language and symbols of faith to motivate either others or themselves to commit violence in the name of the divine entity? Because whether it's Christians or Jews or Muslims or Hindus or whomever, typically when an act of terror is committed in the name of a deity or in the name of dogma or of a religion, mainstream followers of that religion will almost immediately and many times quite prominently push back, saying this is not what our faith is all about.
As they should, right? I mean, you've got normative ways of believing, and you've got extreme ways of believing. I'm obviously focusing on the extremists. And at no point am I trying to draw that parallel, say, well, gee, because the extremists think this way, this must be reflective of what the faith really calls for. The problem is that, you know, whatever faith you believe in, you have a perspective on that. You have an interpretation. That does not mean that your interpretation happens to be shared by the vast number of people who share that particular faith. And I think that's the important part here. At no point am I saying that what Hindus are doing in India or Buddhists in Sri Lanka or Jews in the West Bank or Sikhs in India, at no point should this be construed as representative of what the faith really stands for. But at the end of the day, what does that question even mean? What does the faith stand for? I happen to be Roman Catholic. The church that I once attended on a fairly regular basis was very different in 1600 than it is today. What does it mean to be a normative faith? What does it mean that, what does the faith teach? Yes, there are some universal principles and universal truths, if you want to use that word, but it's also an evolving thing. So, you know, I'm very conscious of the fact that I probably hit some pretty raw nerves with this book, but I just don't want people to say, well, you're just anti-religion. I'm not. What I'm trying to point out is that there are a bunch of actors out there who claim that they have religious sanction, you know, divine sanction, do what they're doing, and that's what we need to push back against. As you said, I'm expecting a lot of pushback from people saying, that's not my faith. Good, you're right, it's not your faith. How do you become active in shouting out those who claim that it is?
100%, Phil. I mean, there's got to be, that's got to be the mandate of something like this. I mean, if I'm an individual that's, I mean, to people of faith, that faith is the most important thing to them in their life. I mean, people say their faith is more important than their marriage. Their faith is more important than their career. Their faith is more important than any other relationship they have. Why would you not want the principles of your faith to be accurately represented? And why would you not obviously try to take every step you could to prevent the deplorable, the unacceptable from happening, that is killing or murder or maiming in the name of, you know, faith centered around love and peace and forgiveness? Is just so incongruous.
Yeah, and you should be angry. So if you're a Muslim living in Calgary and you see, you're probably well aware of the Calgarians that went to fight for Islamic State a couple of years ago, you should be angry about that. Or if you're a Christian in Pittsburgh, you should be angry that the idiot that attacked the synagogue put out a manifesto and he's using Christian precepts. He's using extracts from the Old and New Testament just for what he did. This should make you really, really pissed. And as a result, you know, when you hear this kind of language, you shouldn't say, oh, that's just another interpretation of my faith. No, it's a bad interpretation. It's a wrong interpretation. And therefore, I'm going to call you out on it. I'm going to challenge you. And we'll have this debate on what this religion really stands for. If I get that kind of reaction, then I think maybe this book was worth writing in the first place.
Phil, your book will be available, I understand correctly, November 25th, right? In a few weeks?
Yeah, in a few weeks. It's published by Lynn Reiner out of Colorado. It's an American publisher, and you can get it online now. So I hope that people have a look and provide me some feedback on what they thought of it.
Okay, perfect. I'm looking forward to reading it. I just want to, I've not yet, I don't have a copy in my hands, but I'd like, so I haven't had a chance to flip through it. But give us one thing to think about. Give us, Bill, something to chew on today, something to take away, the you know, based on the premise of your book or otherwise.
Despite the fact, and this is true, that the vast majority of terrorist attacks over the past 20 years have been carried out by what we call Islamist extremists, so Muslims, you know, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, et cetera, there are a lot of groups out there that kind of fly under the radar that also are religious actors that we're not paying attention to, and I think we need to because, you know, as you said, killing innocents is killing innocents, irrespective of the God you believe in.
Oh, Phil, it's always good to have you on the show. Thank you for this, and congratulations on the new work.
Thank you very much. We'll talk soon.
You got it. That's Phil Gursky, who's the president and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting, a former senior analyst with CSIS. You can check out, again, find his book online on Amazon or get it later this month in person at your favorite independent bookstore. And in the meantime, check out his website. Fascinating stuff. Again, those daily features, Today in Terrorism, at BorealisThreatAndRisk.com.
The Ryan Jesperson Show, weekday mornings at 9 on 630 CHED.